I'm here with Chris Orr in Pavilion Gardens Cafe in the week before the Fringe starts, but also the week before the Brighton £5 Fringe starts as well. Two shows this year, Chris.
Yeah, the first show, which is on they're both at the Lord Nelson and out in the Conservatory, I think it's called, gloriously, 8 p.m. The first show is 11th of May, is called Slow Pro, the opposite of Slick. And the second show is a sort of repeat of the one I did last year, my one-man show called Chris Orr's Instant All Sorts, Part Deux.
Are they both improv-based?
Yes. There's a slight difference. Last year, because I told a friend of mine all these terrible disaster stories of my theatrical career, He said they were quite funny and I should try them out in front of an audience. I wasn't convinced, but I did, and they did work. And since then, I've also done the Tales of Disaster to a group of actors who even laughed, which quite surprised me. So it'll be a little bit of anecdoting at the beginning of the second show, followed by improvised stuff, followed by an opportunity, if you want to join in the second half, but in a nice way, only for people who want to. It's not like that kind of sad stand-up, working out his low self-esteem on the front row style, but generally if people want to play with me, they can. If they don't, they just watch. The first show, though, there'll be three or four of us, hopefully, in it. We're meeting for a workshop this Sunday, and that will all be improvised, but it'll be a new style of impro, which I've been working on for a little while, called Slow Pro.
Now, that's good. A new style of impro. I've been saying for a while it's about time the improvisers actually started improvising their improvisation. So what's Slow Pro?
Well, what it is what's happened over the number of years, improvisation's become impro and improv, and it's become comedy improv. And if you go back to the roots, it was never that. And what I'm trying to do as well is we're developing things where we put silence and pause and stillness into it, so we get a form that it's less comic and more theatrical. I'm not saying it won't be funny, but it won't automatically default to funny, and we won't think it's great if it's funny and bad if it's not. So we've been playing around with various things. I was supposed to be doing a show up in London on this basis, but the venue's not ready. So that was on a profit. That was on a box office split. So hopefully that will come about soon. But yeah, the idea is, I suppose, in a way, we did one recently with a friend where we put certain restrictions and pauses in it, and it did, for like about 10 minutes, sound like we've just made up a bit of Samuel Beckett. So it's kind of a little different. But, you know, they're £5, so the idea is that the audience can afford to take a risk. It may or may not all work, and we'd like the audience to come and tell us what they thought didn't work afterwards, because it's part of the process of developing it. But I think somewhere in the evening you'll get more than £5 worth of entertainment, because that's what's less than two pints, isn't it? So, yeah.
And what do you think of all fields improvisation's become so formulaic?
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of defaulted to a sort of branch of light entertainment. And it's interesting if you look back at the innovators of this, which is Paul Sills in Chicago and Keith Johnson in London, who's now in Canada. Now, Paul Sills is based on a book by his mother called Viola Spolin, called Improvisation for the Theatre. But that book's not about setting up improv shows. That book is about actually training young actors using games and improvisation. Keith Johnson, though, did go to do shows in his own company, actually studied his work with the writers group at the Royal Court. In other words, writing, using it as a... So it's sort of moved... And a lot of the early improvisers, I look at people, there's a guy called Gary Schall who calls them these nightclub guys. And it's just to get back to more theatrical. I mean, I think... Generally, Keith Johnson just moans, whereas Paul Sills went off and developed a thing called story theatre, which is more devising than improvisation. I think that's why a lot of people end up there, because with devising, you can conduct and control it and get to something a little more serious, a little more deep. And that's an area of work I do as well. So I've known, for instance, that the exercises I've done, which are going to show in Slow Pro Live, work really well for devising. What I want to know is find out whether they work really well in live improvisation as well. But I think they will, but, you know... The proof of the pudding is always in the eating. Is that what the phrase says?
Yeah. Or maybe in the watching as well, and the paying a fiver for. So in terms of you playing somewhere like the Lord Nelson, and also you stage one of your shows at the Cafe Moksha, for example, what makes you choose those kind of spaces over a traditional theatre space, apart from the cost?
Well, actually, with the Moksha, the cost was about the same. So that was just me wanting to do. With the Moksha, the drive for that was I'd seen these shows where people did lots of short shows, you know, particularly well known in Brighton, and I felt that they weren't very coherent, and a lot of it did always default to sketch, like, and not necessarily serious. I wanted to do something that had some sort of coherence and linkage with short pieces, made sense as a single piece, as lots of short pieces, and also, but that show turned out quite different from the way I intended, and that again was part of the learning process. I couldn't devise enough material to make the show I originally intended, which is why we had the second half improvised, but it did actually work very well. But you kind of, necessity is the mother of invention. I think, you know, my attitude is you follow an artistic process and you just keep following it. You don't at any point stop and start to make it work, and you end up where you end up, which is how we ended up with that. So I learned things from that. Especially about devising, which I would, you know, every time you do it, I think, how would I do something different? And I know what I would do different there. And I always think that the bad thing for any sort of artist or whatever is to sit on their laurels and think, I'm great. The good thing you think is, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what would I do different? And sometimes what you do different may not necessarily work anymore, but it's worth exploring. You know, it's a kind of, it's a messy business, but, you know, I prefer to be then somewhere neat.
So do you think those kind of venues give you a bit more permission to experiment then?
Not necessarily, because I'm thinking some of the stuff that Tim Crouch does, you know, like the author and Imel Valley, they've got a different vibe to them, and they're stuck in a theatre space as well. So I think you can. I think it gives you a little... I mean, the nice thing about the cafe was what it sold was we didn't need to think about set or anything like that. That was the set, you know, and the setting. And so the nice thing about, you know, a site-specific show, it takes away one area of things you have to do in the theatre, which is to build a set and all the rest of it. And it's nice. Although I do, you know, again, I quite like theatre in the round because that gets rid of four walls. So that's nice as well. It's just props and costume. And I like, you know, I don't have enough resources at the moment. I do like, actually, if I get in the theatre using sound and light to create atmosphere, you can, you know, the right lighting and the sound of seagulls, you know, you're on the coast, you can be in a black box. So, yeah, I think you can do it anyway. It's just, I don't know, I suppose I'm curious and often easily bored, so I do something different. I'd like to create... to claim some great artistic rationale, but really I think that, you know, it helps in making art if you're childish and easily bored. I think that's something that Ricky Gervais has in spades, which is why his work's interesting, you know.
Final question then, Chris. In the few minutes before you step on the stage in these shows, what's Chris Orr doing?
I'm trying to think about anything else but the show. I like to go on. I mean, I said to somebody, one of my best moments in an improv show once was, and it's usually people step into a scene when they think I've got a really clever idea, but my thing is, if my head, I've got no idea what to do, that's the point at which I step into a scene, because I think that's the best thing for an improviser to do. And I once got a huge laugh doing that by just saying the word hello, so, and which is weird really, because that was all I stepped on knowing nothing, that's the only thing in my head, so I said it, you know. And that's, I think that's the great way to improvise. Yeah,
Chris Orr, back at the £5 Fringe, thanks very much indeed.